Hello and welcome into this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. There's breaking news. It's an emergency pod. Yes, it's January 12th, 2026, and there is so much to talk about. Rex, Brooks Koepka is back on the PGA Tour. We had the news last Friday that he had submitted a reapplication to rejoin the PGA Tour. And a couple of days later, he is announced as part of what they're calling a returning player program. There's a very specific set of guidelines for reinstatement. You have to be off the PGA Tour for at least 2 years. You have to have had won a major championship or a players championship since 2022. Hello, Bryson DeChambeau, John Rahm, and Cameron Smith. And oh yeah, this offer, this one-time offer, can only be accepted until February 2nd. It's about 3 weeks from now. What a day. What's your read on this?
I'm going to rehash what I said on Golf Today, and you went on right after me, so I expect you to rehash some of your stuff well.
Yeah.
You and I are both scribes, so we both sit at the keyboard sometimes, and we struggle with the words that we want to use. And the word that I wanted to use in the lead, you never struggle. No, that never happens to you. The word I wanted to use when I was writing this story was elegant, because as you sit and you break it down, like there was about 30 pages of notes and news and everything to sort of sift through. And I didn't find anything in there that was particularly concerning to me. But then I realized elegant wasn't the right word. This is Brian Rolapp flexing. There was nothing elegant about it. Mm. He stepped to the stage and put some bass in his voice and decided that I was going to make a move on this grand stage. I called it savvy instead, because if you look at the fine line that Brian Rolapp had to walk with this one. On one side, you had to come up with some sort of sanctions. You had to appease the membership. The players who stayed behind and didn't take the bags and stayed loyal to the PGA Tour, you had to make sure that those players were appeased, that they were kept happy and in the fold. On the other side, you couldn't make whatever the punishment was going to be for these players to come back so stringent and so difficult that the likes of the four players that essentially we're talking about right now, your John Rahm, your Bryson DeChambeau, your Brooks Koepka, and your Cam Smith, didn't want to come back. Like the idea that, no, I have to sit out a year or two and can't play golf and have to pay these crazy fines. No, I'm not going to do that. And he threaded that needle. You have to look at this policy and think to yourself that this was put together over the course of many, many months. I know that the idea is, the talking points are, well, this is just, it's a very unique situation. They used that numerous times, pointing out that this is just in response to Brooks Koepka turning down the last year of his contract with LIV Golf and deciding that I want to take up my membership again. This did not come together in essentially however many days it would be, 5 days since we kind of learned the news that he'd reapplied for his tour membership last Friday. This has been in the works for a long time, and it checks all the right boxes. I think that, to use the word you use, this is good for the PGA Tour, full stop. There's no more conversation about that. Now, we can have a broader conversation about what this means to the other members of LIV Golf, what it means actually to the three members that would apply to this particular category. But when it comes to the PGA Tour and what Brian Rolapp is trying to do, which is improve his product day in and day out, you checked all those boxes.
I mean, you used the words elegant. You use the word savvy. I would add the word masterstroke, because what has happened over the past couple of weeks, ever since Brooks Koepka announced on December 23rd, yes, Christmas Eve, that he had been part of a mutual separation with LIV Golf, is that everyone wanted their pound of flesh. Everyone wanted there to be some sort of punishment, with the idea being that you can't set a precedent that if he is just welcomed with open arms back on the PGA Tour, what about those who stayed loyal? How do you make it right with them? How do you make it right with them competitively, now having an accomplished player, a five-time major champion, Brooks Koepka, back in the fold? And how do you make it right financially? Here's a player who, by all accounts, got a nine-figure deal with LIV Golf. How can you just welcome him back with no repercussions financially? This is a masterstroke, because he did everything right. Brian Rolapp, Tiger Woods, Future Competitions Committee, the PGA Tour Policy Board, everyone who was a part of this decision. I go back to Rex about a year ago. Remember, like, Jason Gore was part of the working group to figure out pathways back for the PGA Tour. So they may have potentially even been borrowing from some of the past work that they had a year ago, when it looked like we were actually going to have a merger between these two sides. And I had a player text me who said, there's no such thing as a fair solution, but this is as good as you can draw it up. Right? Because when you look at sort of the nitty-gritty of what Brooks Koepka is actually going to be eligible for, and I think almost more importantly, what he's not going to be eligible for, it's pretty perfect. And just to rifle through those real quick, if this is the first time that you were hearing this breaking news, Brooks Koepka is not being allowed into the signature events unless he qualifies for them. The full field events that he does play in 2026, and Brooks Koepka is going to have to play a minimum of 15 full field regular PGA Tour events. Those tournaments that he gets into, those fields recs are going to be expanding to accommodate him. So he's not even taking a spot in the field from someone who deserves it. It's also not going to be affecting player statuses for 2027 because this was such a late addition. So let's say you finished 100 on the FedEx Cup list and Brooks Koepka was ahead of you. All of a sudden you don't get bumped to 101 and lose your playing status that way. Oh yeah. And also financially, to make it right, the PGA Tour is estimating that Brooks Koepka, by not being a part of the player equity program for the next 5 years, that is going to be worth an estimated $50 to $80 million. In my opinion, Rex, it's hard to see how this does anything other than create a stronger PGA Tour that most, if not all, PGA Tour members can wrap their head around.
$5 million to charity out of Brooks's pocket that the tour and Brooks will decide. You look at the fact that he can't get a playoff bonus. He can win a portion of the purse, whatever it is, if he makes it to the tour championship, but no playoff bonus. That all adds up to that $50 to $85 million number that they threw out there. I don't understand exactly how private equity is working, so I'm not quite sure how they landed on that number, but all right, I'm going to take it.
Sounds good.
Face value. Yeah, it sounds good. And I think there is something to it because I probably talked to a half dozen players. And by and large, most of them were kind of, even the ones that don't particularly like the idea of those players coming back, were like, yeah, all right, then that's the way to do it. Like, we had to come up with some sort of way to get this done. I will point out that if there is one problem that this is going to run up against, it has less to do with the LIV players coming back and who the LIV players are. The idea that the PGA Tour is now catering almost exclusively to the stars, this only doubles down on that idea because you're only going after essentially four players. And interesting enough, I actually was texting back and forth with a LIV player who's on his way to Miami. There is some timing involved here. LIV actually has like their media days over the next couple of days in South Florida. So I'm sure those will be very interesting. But I was texting back and forth with one player who was on his way and was kind of pointing out that, yeah, like I think each one of these players, if given this opportunity, will probably take it, and it'll probably open the door for other players to start looking into it as well. The fascinating part here, and this is based on conversations that I had, is you and I and pretty much anyone else who's been paying attention since the beginning, really since 2022, Brooks's name was the first one that came up as a possible defect. He was the first one that sort of pointed out that maybe I've got some buyer's remorse and this isn't for me. This isn't my bag. I think that factors into the decision that, okay, Brooks, you can just walk out of the last year of your contract. Whether if he had to prorate some of that back or not, it opened the door for LIV Golf and the Public Investment Fund to say, look, if you don't want to be here, then walk away. We're perfectly fine with that. If the floodgates open, which I'm pretty sure that is Brian Rolapp's real gamut here, that if I can create a scenario, not just with the policy identifying your four most important players, but do it in such a small window and make February 2nd the deadline. Oh, it's because you start your season February 4th in Saudi Arabia. It's a very, again, going back to this word, savvy move. Because even if you're Cam Smith, who by all accounts would rather fish right now than play golf, you have to think to yourself, man, like maybe I want to take that up. Maybe that's something I want to look into. John Rahm's a little bit different of a scenario because in theory he would have 2, maybe 3 years left on his contract. Again, you've pointed this out on numerous occasions that the drawback here is we don't know. There's no transparency really when it comes to these contracts. So 2 or 3 years left on a deal is a little bit more than certainly what Bryson faces right now and what Brooks faced going forward. But man, it opens up a very tense 2 weeks for those players on LIV right now.
This is the real transfer window. That's what LIV likes to promote. Yeah. players who drop into the open zone. This is the ultimate transfer window.
Golf's as it portal relates to LIV. Is nuts, man.
And the PGA Tour. When you read that open letter to the membership and also to fans of the PGA Tour that was written by Brian Rolapp and company, he was very clear. This is a one-time offer. And what is offered right now might not necessarily be the offer that you receive later, obviously putting a little bit of pressure as well. You bring up a good point that this is, it's almost a futile exercise because we don't know what the other players' contracts consist of. You know, is Bryson DeChambeau's deal ironclad? Is John Rahm's written in blood where there's no opt-out clause whatsoever? But what I tried to argue on the PGA on Golf Today and why this is such a really interesting scenario is the reputational hit that these players have made who went from the PGA Tour to LIV Golf. Because I would make the argument that outside of Bryson DeChambeau, who is a historic and a transformative figure unto himself, none of those players are more popular right now than when they left the PGA Tour. I think that's indisputable. And so they have to make the calculus on their own. What does that reputational hit cost? And maybe these players can't get out of their LIV deal. Maybe this is just a moot point. However, at least in the court of public opinion, this is what Brian Rolup is telling these guys. Here's a mulligan. Here's an off-ramp. You have to decide whether you made a mistake and you actually care about your competitive legacy, or are you going to signal to golf fans that what I really care about is money, lots and lots of money. The amount of money we can't even know, but let's say it's going to be, I don't know, 8 to 9 figures for John Rahm that he would potentially have to forfeit if he wanted to come back to the PGA Tour. Again, this is just a guess because these contracts are not made public. But John Rahm has to signal to golf fans over the next couple weeks, yep, I want to be a historic figure. I want to be a generational talent. I want to play on the best and strongest and most competitive tour in the world. Or, nope, I'm happy playing now 72 holes on LIV. I'm happy playing short fields. I'm happy playing in front of sparse fans and with very little viewership over the next couple years. That is, to me, a masterstroke by Brian Rolup, because it really puts these guys in a vice in determining how they are going to be perceived for the next couple of years. I think that's like a really subliminal message that he's trying to send here.
Well, and it puts LIV Golf in a vice as well. And I don't want to be two rainbows and unicorns, because it's not as though both sides are going to come back to the table and we're going to have some sort of reunification of the game, which is where this conversation started. I don't see that happening, but certainly if you're on the PGA Tour side, and we've gone round and round about this. I don't know anything about big business. I don't pretend to, but I do know one thing as a matter of fact. Both sides in a negotiation can't have leverage. That makes no sense to me. One side has to have leverage. It's the way water works. One side has to have an ability to say, nope, you're going to do the way I want to do this because you don't have any other options. By applying this pressure to LIV Golf, and Brooks was leaving anyway, but he just provided the conduit. He was the lightning rod that allowed the PGA Tour to lay this policy out and to create this pathway. Now the other three players in that category, again, the only really three players that matter over on LIV Golf at the moment, they now can all circle back around, and one of two things are going to happen. John Rahm's going to want to get out of his contract, and I don't know how complicated or difficult that's going to be, or Bryson DeChambeau and John Rahm are going to decide that, nope, if you want to double down, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you again. They're going to get a second payday. And you're right. It's up to the players at that point to decide if this is what I want the legacy to be. The part about Brooks that I find fascinating, and I mentioned this on Golf Today, and I think we've touched on it before, that if you look at the one thing that I felt like LIV Golf did, they robbed the PGA Tour of their villains. And that's not entirely fair to Brooks or John or any of the rest of them, because they're all different human beings, different players, whatever the case may be, now versus when they left to go to LIV Golf. However, there's no debating the fact that Brooks was a polarizing figure. He wasn't beloved by all. Either you were a Brooks guy or you're a Bryson guy there for a long time. And by taking away the villains, you sort of rob the PGA Tour of a really important storyline. Every story needs a villain, just like every story needs a hero. And by taking them away, I think that was the part that robbed the tour of sort of that secret sauce that you didn't have anymore. Just to kind of point out how, I don't want to say universal, because I think my comment last week was, if there's 280 essentially PGA Tour members, you're probably going to get 280 different opinions on this. This is from one player that I do find fascinating. Look, life isn't fair and never will be. This is a quote. And I'm just glad that there is movement between the two tours. If I told you that was a PGA Tour player, you'd probably say, yep, I can see a tour player having that sort of level-headed take to it. That quote is from Hudson Swafford, who is, if anyone has a dog in this fight, it's Hudson Swafford. Hudson Swafford was essentially the first former PGA Tour member to lose his status because he joined LIV Golf. and to leave that tour, to be relegated off Live Golf, and decide that I want reinstatement back. That essentially came out to, it's a really complicated equation, but they told him, we'll see you in January 2027. So he did not get the sweetheart deal that these four players are getting right now. If anyone has a dog in this fight, if anyone should sit and complain and scream at the heavens that I've been treated unfairly, it's Hudson Swafford. And even Hudson can recognize that, you know what, this is good for the game.
So I was just on Golf Today, and preceding my segment was a two-way with George Savarikas, who was actually live for Golf Channel at the Sony Open. He said he was walking the range.
Fabulous in the sun out in Sony, yes.
Oh, it is. He's wearing that new Peter Millar, which you and I are going to be donning pretty soon as well. But he was walking down the range when the bulletin went out, and he said the reaction was mixed. And Damon Hack was like, mixed? What do you mean there's a mixed bag? How could players possibly be upset by this? But the pessimistic side of it, the negative side of it was, well, the PGA Tour has been telling us that this is how they were going to handle live defectors over the past 3 or 4 years. And all of a sudden you're changing the rules, you know, mid swing, all of a sudden with the first event of 2026 about to kick off, all of a sudden there's a new PGA Tour member. Yes. Yes. That's exactly what this announcement is making, that this is a new world order, and this is Brian Rolapp's world. This is not a man who particularly cares about what is unfolded with the framework agreement. This is not a man who is particularly interested in the merger that was or wasn't going to happen. This is not a man who particularly cares about what happened in 2022 with these players defecting. His single biggest imperative and his prerogative as the leader of the PGA Tour as a business is, how do I make the PGA Tour as strong as possible? One way you can do that is to green light Brooks Koepka's reentry as soon as possible. And there was a lot of folks who talked about the precedent of, you know, you got to have consequences. Well, what he is doing is saying, I don't really care about that. What I care about is when
there's real consequences. $85 million is a consequence. That's a lot of money. I don't know how they got to that number, but that's a lot of money.
But the guiding principle for Brian Rolapp is not necessarily punitive in nature. It's not about punishment. It's not making Brooks Koepka pay for what he did. You know, he's not trying to inflict any sort of moral wound on Brooks Koepka. What Brian Rolapp is trying to do, his core mission is to make the PGA Tour as strong as possible. And so as we sit here now on Monday of the first tournament of the 2026 PGA Tour season, he has accomplished that goal. He has made the PGA Tour stronger by bringing in not just a player of Brooks Koepka's caliber and stature as a five-time major winner. You have a player in Brooks Koepka who is immensely popular among fans. Remember the old player impact program, the PIP program? Brooks Koepka routinely ranked among the top five and the top 10 in those rankings year in and year out. He is one of the needle movers on a tour that has been bereft of needle movers over the past couple of years outside of Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy.
And Todd Lewis was on right in between us on Golf Today, and he brought a different perspective as well. And he was very much a proponent of this. And I think he's on board with what you and I have just voiced, the idea being that this is a step in the right direction. However, I will point out that, like George found out walking up and down the range, I also found out that there are players who don't like this. I will read again because people love it when I read quotes, but quote, this is from a former PGA Tour winner, quote, the tour can't stick to any decision they come to. This just proves what I've said for years about it being a multi-tiered system. If you can help the tour, they would bend over backwards to accommodate you. That has less to do with this being a live PGA Tour conversation than it does that everything the tour seems to be doing right now is geared towards the game's top players, whether that's reducing field sizes or going to a smaller PGA Tour schedule in 2027 or anything
else.
This
is not your daddy's PGA Tour, I think, is the message that Brian Rolapp is trying to send.
And look, to be fair to Brian Rolapp, and this is different, and I did want to bring this in and have a quick discussion about Jay Monahan as well, because this doesn't happen if Jay Monahan is still in office. And I'm not even doing that to pick on Jay Monahan. I just think that's a fact. But to be fair, when it comes to Brian Rolapp, you're right. He answers to one person, and that's the shareholders. And not only is that SSG, the equity firm that invested in the PGA Tour, but now it's over, or at least 200 PGA Tour members who now have equity in their own tour. He only answers to them now. And I think this is a really good answer. If you're one of those equity members and you're just looking at the bottom line, this makes your product better.
What can happen when you bring in an outsider? someone who had no prior experience in golf, you can have decisions like this, where he's not carrying any of the baggage of the war that's been fought since 2022. And you can also get potentially a reimagination of a PGA Tour product that has essentially been the same for the past 4 or 5 decades. And we're going to wait to see what that actually looks like when the future competition committee comes to it. But Brian Rolup, as an outsider, is already making his presence felt. That is for sure. One thing I wanted to wrap up this podcast with, Rex, is actually Brooks Koepka, the player. What is the PGA Tour getting in Brooks Koepka? Because that almost seems to be forgotten. I would make the argument that Brooks Koepka has almost become a symbol of what's possible in this new landscape. The potential reunification between players on the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. John Rahm thought he was going to be that guy. Brooks Koepka might actually be that guy. But from a playing standpoint, a competitive standpoint, where do you sit on this and what the PGA Tour is actually getting inside the ropes?
It was fascinating. I went back and I know you didn't come on this podcast to take a quiz. That's your famous line. But when was the last individual stroke play event that he played in? And did he finish inside the top 15 at that event?
I mean, it would have to be in the spring. The Phoenix Open in 2022.
Very close. Valspar Championship in a tie for 12th. He finished with a closing 65. Not exactly what you would expect from Brooks, because he doesn't particularly like to play in the Valspar Championships of the world. There is some irony that not only is he coming back and he's smiling and it's all kumbaya all over again, but you're going to go play the events that you swore for so many years didn't really motivate you.
I mean, I don't think this can be discounted. The potential boon, at least short term, you know, if Brooks Koepka does not play well, you know, later in the spring or the summer, it's not going to matter as much. But if he has to play a minimum of 15 full field PGA Tour events, that is huge for the Phoenixes and the Farmers and the Valspars.
So you have to come up with 10 others. We know two of them. He's starting at Torrey Pines in just a few weeks. After that, he will be at the Phoenix Open. Well, you will be. And so now we're going to add in 8 others. Imagine those 8 other events and the impact they could have. It's important to point out that the one thing that probably could have had the membership turn on Rolup in this new policy is if they left the door open for him to get invites into the signature events. That was, again, a very savvy move. And you pointed out, what impact could he possibly have? You know who's getting on a plane and flying to San Diego now and he wasn't before?
This guy. Yeah, which I think is great. And look, his avenues into the signature events for the rest of 2026
same are as to play well. Else's.
Just like it was Ben Griffin and Andrew Novak in the early part of 2025. They played well on the West Coast Swing, parlayed that into signature events starts, played well in those. All of a sudden, it's snowballing. They get a win, and they can rock it inside the top 25 in the official world golf ranking. Brooks Koepka is going to have that same opportunity. When he shows up at the Farmers, when he shows up at Phoenix, he's going to be accruing FedEx Cup points just like everybody else. And he's going to have to play well, or he's going to be playing what is essentially the B tour on the PGA Tour and being subjected to the non-signature events for the remainder of 2026. That's not going to affect his status necessarily by virtue of his win at the PGA Championship in 2023. He is exempt on the PGA Tour through 2028, but Brooks Koepka likes the spotlight. He wants to play against the very best players on the PGA Tour. To do that, you have to play in the signature events. You have to play well. Again, to bring it full circle, when I read through this entire release, the nitty-gritty, the minute details, every single piece was really well considered, and it's hard to quibble with any of the details in what Brooks Koepka is eligible for, and I think more importantly, what he is not.
There's two of those details. I'm glad you brought this up. You have to kind of dig a little bit deeper, and I'm sure you saw it, that Brooks Koepka will now be eligible for the President's Cup, as well as to play in a TGL league. It's probably not that big of a deal when it comes to the President's Cup. Certainly, if you're TGL, you're going to take a long, hard look of thinking to yourself, yeah, I'd like to have Brooks on one of those teams. Like, I don't know who gets rotated in or out or how that also possibly works. The President's Cup thing is interesting, though. If you're Jeff Ogilvie, who is the captain of the international team, how much pressure would you try to put on a Cam Smith to ask, maybe you should consider this? Like, certainly we could use you later in the year. It's a very small piece of the puzzle, but to your point, I think everything here was thought out really well.
What do you think, Rex? You're going to be in San Diego. I'm going to be in Phoenix. Real quick, what do you think the fan reaction, the fan reception is going to be like towards Brooks Koepka upon his return to the tour?
He was such a polarizing figure for good and bad. I mean, fans, the frat boy guys love them. I mean, my son, the kids that came after you on that, I mean, they were just brutal to you on that text exchange. Too bad about your Jags, Duval. It is going to play well with that crew, because he always did. And now the fact that he's back, now the fact that he can be viewed as a trailblazer or some sort of bridge between the two worlds is only going to help. But again, the other half of it is he wasn't popular with everybody. I mean, certainly whatever it is, that tiff that happened, that man tiff between he and Bryson back in the day, not all the love went Brooks's way. There were plenty of people who were on Bryson's side. And I think that's the juicy, interesting part about all this.
Yeah, I think fans by and large are a forgiving bunch. I think they're willing to let bygones be bygones. There's certainly a segment of the golf fan population that's going to wish that Brooks Koepka got the death penalty from the PGA Tour and that he served 2 or 3 year suspension. We don't want him. We don't need him. We've moved on. He's a has-been. I think it's going to be up to Brooks Koepka to establish the trust and the faith and the respect, not just of the players on the PGA Tour who may have felt blindsided or railroaded by Brooks Koepka helping legitimize the LIV product. But I think fans want to feel that as well. And so I'll be very curious to see if a guy who has notoriously have an independent streak to not really care about anything or anyone other than himself, will he somehow go on like a PR blitz to improve his public standing? Will he all of a sudden be more accommodating with the media? Will he sign more autographs? Will he be joking around and having fun during TGL spot duty, which certainly seems likely in his near future? That's the part I'm very curious to see, because that seems to run like antithetical to everything that Brooks Koepka believes in. But I think it's also important to him to sort of regain what may have been hit reputationally in his public perception, his public persona.
And you asked about what to expect from a player. Let's remember, like back when he left the PGA Tour in 2022, we have since learned, because of the Netflix documentary, that he did it because he thought he was washed. He thought injuries were essentially going to end his competitive career. So why not take a big bag full of money? I mean, I certainly understand where that was coming from. That has come around. He's not that player anymore. I think there's probably going to be a bit of a honeymoon phase when he first comes out. And I think he's going to have to figure out again, how do I compete week in and week out, 72 holes? How do I motivate myself? That was things he faced early in his career before he ever went to LIV Golf. So I think there's going to be a bit of a learning curve, some growing pains. But my guess is we end up with a version of the 2021 Brooks. I don't expect him to win every major, it seems like he shows up to play in, but I would be surprised if he's not competitive.
Yeah, I mean, he just has to play better. Full stop. He's 159th in Data Golf's rankings, really struggled in 2025. First time in his career that he missed 3 of 4 major championship cuts. The one that he did make at the U.S. Open retreated badly on the weekend. His iron play fell off. His putting was inconsistent. Very curious to see how Brooks Koepka plays. Very curious to see how Brooks Koepka receives. You guys know, with Rex at Torrey Pines, myself in Phoenix, we'll be bringing to you on the pod everything you need to know. All right, that is going to do it for this breaking news / emergency pod edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. It seems like you guys enjoy the first linear made-for-TV edition of the show that dropped on Monday. As a reminder, you can watch that show in its entirety, not just on YouTube on Sunday nights, but also 9 and 11 a.m. Eastern time on Monday mornings on Golf Channel. Rex and I will be back on Wednesday to diagnose some of the other fallout from the Brooks Koepka news. Maybe we'll have another emergency pod in the coming days. Who can know? As well as preview the Sony Open. Yes, the season opening event on the PGA Tour schedule. Rex and I'll be back on Wednesday to talk about that. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys in a couple of days.